Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And the focus of this program very often is pain. Pain because things hurt. And we often try to get rid of that which hurts. But it brings us to something that came in from the BBC News today. Health, believe it or not. Up to 1 million people in the United Kingdom have completely preventable severe headaches caused by taking headache pills. So they finally discovered, the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence, which, by the way, is NICE, N-I-C-E, isn't that cute? National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence. In their guidelines for treating it, they talk about medication overuse headaches. Now, here's something that I've known about for years, and I've researched migraine headaches because I've had dear friends who have had migraine headaches, and I've worked on trying to find whatever cures are available, even studied at the Mayo Clinic, where I found that they had certain procedures that really worked. But what they're finding is that people who feel the first pain of migraine have been told to take preventative medicine for the migraines. First, you're going to take something that's going to kill the pain. Start with an aspirin, go all the way up to Demerol or whatever painkillers there are. So first, we're going to quell the thing, and then the second thing is we're going to try to prevent it. Now, think about this in life. This is usually the approach to most difficulties. How are we going to shut down the difficulty, and how are we going to prevent it from happening again? You're having an argument with your mate. They're complaining about something. Your first thought is, how do I shut them down, and how do I stop them from bringing this up again? This is the approach of most difficulties and most pains. How do I stop it? And how do I prevent it from coming back? Well, we try that in medicine all the time. So all of medicine is based, the entire medical industry is based on the belief that we can get you to stop it from coming back by selling you preventative medicine. So people take medicines for their hearts, they take them for their livers, they take them for their spleens, take them for their blood pressure, they take them for their osteo-everything and their arterial-everything and all the other things that you get, you take for diabetes, you take all these pills that prevent the recurrence of the worst manifestation of the illness, the crisis. The time that you have, you know, your heart goes into AFib or something like that. We want to stop that. So we don't want you to go into AFib, even though AFib is not necessarily all that dangerous. So we're going to give you blood clotting mechanisms that you're going to take that are going to keep, not, we're going to keep your blood very thin. And if we keep it thin and flowing through your body, then you can't have a stroke when you have a heart attack. So you're going to take Coumadin or Pradaxa or one of those things, which are pretty powerful drugs, meant to make your blood like water, which is, I guess, nature didn't want you to have that because it's supposed to be sticky, I think, or it seems to want to be sticky. And the other thing we take is we're going to take something that's going to keep your heart only beating at a certain level, that will control it from going over a certain number of beats per minute. And so we'll take that away from you too. And it's the same thing with depression. We're gonna control your mood range. See, if you're depressed, we're gonna give you a pill. We're not gonna just take away your depression. We're gonna make you feel better. We'll give you a little something that'll calm you down. That'll be a little sedative. We'll include it in this pill. And then we'll give you something that will control the range of your emotions so that you don't feel this anymore. That's what medication does. That's what headache medication does. The problem is that once you take these medications, the body calls for them. The body sings out, It says, where's my medication? It becomes addicted to the medication itself. It's something as simple as cigarette smoking. You know, the reason that most people smoke is because they're angry. Smoking is a sedative. It just helps you stay cool. Be cool means light up a cigarette. There were even cigarettes called Cools. Do you remember them? And they sold big. Why do you think? Because they looked like menthol and they looked like icebergs and people wanted to have icebergs going in their chest? No, because the idea of being cool was having a cigarette. And being cool, what does it mean? You remember from West Side Story? Be cool, right? It means don't show your anger. Don't let it spill out. This is Armand DeMille with you, with my two great associates, Lisa Arnone and Gianna Valerio, helping me out today. And we're doing this research today because we want to bring you a very interesting concept that I think you're going to enjoy and relates very much to yesterday's program on stories that we make up. So being cool is cigarette smoking and being cool. So the idea is to be cool, but if you have flashes of anger, what good is that? That's no good, so you light a cigarette, and the cigarette calms you down. But we know that cigarettes calming you down, eventually, you're having more cigarettes than you are having flares of anger. But what do you think happens when the body is so used to these cigarettes that it wants a cigarette? It makes you angry, so that you'll smoke a cigarette. So it keeps triggering you, and you become a nervous kind of person. But look at the person who quits smoking and you want to see anger. Just get prepared. I think people who want to quit smoking, you should know about yourself that you're losing a very good friend who's been keeping you calm down for a long time. It's like a mother's breast that's been in your mouth for years. It calms you down. It's a good friend. It makes you fun. You know, it makes you feel good. You have a relationship with your cigarettes, and the relationship is such that, you know, whenever you want it, you could take it, and then you could throw it right away as soon as you don't want it anymore. How many people can you do that with? Well, you know, cigarettes, an amazing relationship. But you give it up, and up comes the wrath. So what's the problem here? Is the problem the wrath or the cigarette? Well, many drugs that we take and many things that we do are the result of a cure that becomes a bigger problem than the original problem. And today's program is about when the cure becomes the problem. So this study by the British, the BBC's release, which you can see called Painkillers, Are the Cause of Millions of Headaches. This is information that I've had for years, but there's quite an industry out there of things for minimal pain. Imagine going to a dentist and saying, no, I don't want any painkillers. You know, many of you do. No, don't give me anything to kill the pain. I'll feel the pain. It's just pain. It just hurts. So what? I can get through it. You can get through it. But if you get so used to avoiding pain, you become addicted to the things. They start calling for you. I recommend you let yourself feel pain every now and then. I don't mean hit yourself in the back with a whip or something like that. But if things hurt a little bit, let them hurt. Let them hurt. Your back hurts, let it hurt. It'll tell you what to do and what not to do. Take away the back pain. Right? What was it you were saying about leg pain before?
I was saying that what often happens is if you say you have a problem with your knee and you're walking around with that pain in your knee, you start to compensate for the pain in your knee in ways that you don't even really understand with your rest of your body. And
you
what
walk
you notice,
funny. Huh? You walk funny.
Right, you walk funny. But you're not, I'm not saying you're consciously doing it, but you're compensating. And what happens is the next day you wake up and you have a pain in your back because you're walking funny because your knee was hurting.
So this is, Lisa introduces a word called compensation here. Well, is it all about compensation? We're going to have to be looking at that. In psychology, compensation is a strategy whereby one covers up, consciously or unconsciously, weaknesses, frustrations, desires, feelings of inadequacy or incompetence in one life area through the gratification or drive towards excellence in another area. So a compensation is you feel bad in one place, you try to make up for it in another place. Compensation can cover up either real or an imagined deficiency, personal or physical inferiority. How many people have you ever met who say, you know, they can weigh like 110 pounds and they say, I'm fat, right? Because they have this image of themselves. The strategy that you use as the cure doesn't truly address the source of the problem, it just covers it up. So our cover-up is what we're going to be talking about today. But on the other hand, positive compensations may help one to overcome life's difficulties. I mean, you could be shy, and you could wind up going out there and doing public things. You could be, you could be part of some kind of a protest or something. And, you know, even it helps you deal with it. So it's not all negative. But there are two kinds of negative things that people do. One is called overcompensation, which is characterized by a superiority goal. You strive for power, dominance, and you kind of want to be on top, overcompensating. And then there's undercompensating, which includes a demand for help, leads to a lack of courage and a fear for life. So like you become the opposite. You become a hero, which is questionable, and the other is you become the wimp as your way of dealing with it. But neither one of it addresses the issues. Now, another example of failing, of an overcompensation that doesn't work, is what happens around the midlife crisis, whatever that is. Midlife crisis for men and for women, or call it menopause for men and for women, and what happens to people during that time. Many people lack the energy to maintain their normal defenses, including their compensatory acts. So let's say a guy was felt inadequate his entire life, and he played high-level basketball as kind of a compensation to kind of feel like he was strong when he was only playing ball. But then he loses the power to play ball, and the midlife crisis is he starts to feel weak. It's like testosterone kind of goes away. Hypersexuality goes away. You start losing it, you know. So the idea of having a compensation that you try to do doesn't work. Narcissistic people, the people who are very concerned about themselves, the people who live by the image of themselves, they mute their feelings of low self-esteem by talking a lot, by contacting highly admired persons. Or you might compensate for your jealousy and your anger by having fantasies about power, by trying to be beautiful, by trying to be rich. Melanie Klein, a psychiatrist, famous psychiatrist, did a lot of work on that. This is Armand DeMille with my friends, here with you with The Positive Mind. Let's look at some of the things that we have to deal with. In trying to get rid of the pain, think of the pain of childhood loneliness. What do you do to compensate with childhood loneliness? One of the things you do is you could make up a fantasy, right? You could have a whole fantasy in your mind. You could create a family in your mind. Or you get a little dollhouse, and you're in your room, and you act out the dollhouse, and here comes the daddy, and here comes the mommy, and here comes the little baby, and they're going up the stairs, and you have stories in your mind. and you make up stories to make up for your loneliness. Now let's connect that to what we were talking about yesterday when we were telling about people and their stories that they make up. You could just see how the original story is formed and based on the fact that there was you didn't feel so hot as a kid. You didn't like being alone. But the real pain of loneliness manifests in the ultimate compensation, which is a lousy relationship. You just pick relationships that can't work because the object of the relationship is to make up for what you don't feel good about. And usually the person you pick can absolutely be connected to the original source of your initial pain. So if you're in pain of loneliness, very often you'll choose somebody who is unavailable and fall in love with them, because it's kind of related to the fact that it's going to keep you lonely and unavailable. There's the pain of insecurity, where you feel like you're really inadequate and there's something wrong with you and you're a broken child. And you make up for that by trying to be either overly secure or growing up and trying to find a relationship in which you feel that you can't be sure of anything. A lot of people I know are attracted to people who about whom you could never be sure. Someone came to me and told me recently that she had just met somebody who was a gangster, a true gangster. I mean, gangster meaning drug money gangster, sharp cars, pimps, that kind of gangsterism. But, you know, he's a really nice guy. And she's talking about her relationship with him. And this comes straight from her childhood of having a daddy who preferred other people over him. And here she's going out with this man and reinterpreting him as a wonderful person who wants to take care of her, because that's what he says. And she's in the same spot she was as a kid, the same spot, but this one feels real. When you meet something that's a perfect compensation for the moment, it quells the pain. It's like you're putting sand on a fire for the moment, you know? It kind of quells the pain, so it feels perfect. Sometimes it feels like you've fallen in love. By the way, today we definitely want to be able to take your calls. At 212-209-2900, we will be taking your calls. In fact, we'll be talking about what you know about your own compensation. And I want you to call. I especially want you people who call from Facebook who are so active in what you have to say. 212-209-2900. So we're going to get to you shortly. The fear of losing something, you know, you could become overpossessive. The fear of dependency. Now, you know, if you have a fear of dependency, and a lot of people do, you can become a new word I invented called compulsively independent. It's a good word, compulsive independence. It means I must wind up alone, no matter what. I'm going to wind up alone. Fear of powerlessness. You know, people who are powerless very often do things that are overcompensations. And those things are often called counterphobia. So if you have a fear of heights, you do bungee jumping, you know. Bungee jumping, is that what it's called?
Yes, it is.
And, you know, you go off a bridge and you just feel what it's like and you feel the terror going down. But it's overcompensation. People who feel weak very often will join the military so they can have a gun to shoot, so they could feel overcompensated, and then they could become heroes. I often wonder, you know, I also often have this feeling. I mean, I when I see somebody as being lauded as a hero because he charged into the face of the enemy with a pea shooter when they were coming at him with cannons, and they give him a star for doing that, I have a funny feeling inside that that star was, hey, wait, that guy was doing something maybe not have been brave, but just was plain old trying to hurt himself. You get a star for that. I'm sure there are real people who are very brave. So counterphobia and is trying to make up for your things that you do. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. We're talking about compensations that we do, compensatory psychology, and where the solution that you have just doesn't work. Medically, we know they don't work. I mean, they may work a little bit, but they don't really, really work. You become dependent on the cure.
Well, also, if you remove the pain without addressing the underlying reason for the pain, then you're just walking around covering up what's going on, and there's no way to deal with it. There might be a reason you have a headache. There might be a reason that you're feeling bad about something. But if you just keep yourself in a state of everything's okay, I'm not feeling this, then there's no work to be done.
So then how do you apply that to relationships and your work as a therapist with people?
I think relationships are so complicated, because I think you have to balance not getting upset about everything, so knowing what to let go and knowing what you need to address. But if you're uncomfortable or in pain because of something that's going on in a relationship, then you need to talk about it.
Well, how do you separate then, Lisa, the difference between what's just a story or you need, like you say, need to talk about it?
I think it's hard. It's very hard. I think you have to be willing to do some self-exploration. I think you have to try to assess what you can live with and what you can't live with.
Oh, it just sounds miserable. It sounds like it's all kind of fun.
I think it can be freeing sometimes to just say, okay, this isn't going to change, but I can live with it. And then you let it go. And then you can focus on other things. You can be more connected. You can accept someone as they are without thinking it has to do with you every single time.
So maybe the solution is, I think my solution is none of it matters. My solution is the acknowledgement, the realization of the fact that no matter what it is that we find is an issue between couples, none of them really count. That this is not what it's about. It's not about this. Let's say you have a relationship with somebody who winds up stepping out on you and going out with somebody else. And now you're going to talk about stepping out. Now you're going to talk about fidelity. But you have to talk about the nature of the relationship. You don't even have to talk about it. You have to address somehow, and not with words, what is the nature of this relationship? Do you two want to be together? And none of the rules make a difference. How do you get to the point that you both are trying to agree to stay together and find the decency in there without accusing or trying to find somebody wrong and somebody not wrong? How do you do it? How do you get to the bottom of that? So they walk into my office with a story. He did this. Well, she did that. Well, he did this. Well, she doesn't do this anymore. She used to do this, and now she won't do this anymore. And so I have to go to my office where I found I could get this from that other person. And she says, well, the reason I don't do this anymore is because you don't smell as good as you used to. He said, yeah, but, you know, at the office, she doesn't mind my smelling this way. And she does this, and you won't do this. And this becomes the discussion that they will have. And I'll listen to it, and I'll even give it some credence. But in my mind, you know what I'm thinking? These are two lost kids. They want to find each other, and they can't. Or they never had each other in the first place. And they just were going along and going along and going along, and finally the mask came off. Finally the illusion that they were together disappeared. That maybe they weren't together the entire time. So the difficulty is that the mask disappears. Now, when a relationship, this brings us to the compensation, when a relationship is to make up or to hide or to quell some pain, like the pain of loneliness, like the pain of your mother telling you when are you going to have a child. And, you know, when you're already 27 years old, so you jump in somewhere and you have a baby real quick to make your mother happy, which has to do with the pain that your mother has a conditional love for you based on whether or not you're producing babies for her, which you don't want to deal with in the first place. So you'd rather go out and have babies and therefore get a relationship that you don't necessarily want to make everybody happy. Hey, I understand. I understand you get caught in that loop. But we want to address the issue of these compensations. And maybe we could take a look at some of what you've done. So that's what I want from you, my friends. I want you calling in today or writing me emails at armand@thepositivemind.com. And in these, or I will read some off the internet if they come in that way, because some people don't want to speak on the air. What I want to know about you is, what did you do? And what was the pain? And what works and what doesn't work? And how do you see that? That's the idea. 212-209-2900. We're just after our break. I'll play some music, and then we'll go. After the break, we'll come back to you. So we try very hard to find a way to compensate for feelings that we have that aren't so good. And one of the ways we do it is to medicate it. And we medicate it by doing something that makes you feel good. So if you get a good feeling over a bad feeling, very often they wash each other out. If you get drunk, right, when your back aches, your backache pain will go away for a while you're drunk. But then we have a problem. The problem is it's hard to be drunk all day long. And it's hard to stay drunk because you get sick from being drunk all the time. So then you try taking pills while you drink. That's got another problem, as well as getting the prescription and now buying the pills and then getting the pills, and it's moving your mind around a little bit because your mind gets fuzzy, even though you don't know it. So you try everything you can to address the original problem, but you don't even know what the original problem is because the original problem looks like, oh, I'm having too much stress in my life. That's not the problem. Problem goes back way before that. The very thing that made you put all this stress in your life. Why do people stress themselves so much? Because the stress itself is an indication of an attempt at a compensation for some other feeling of weakness that you're hiding. Whenever I hear somebody complain to me about how stressed they are, I hear somebody saying, I put this on myself because I don't feel, because I'm not feeling good. So I make myself feel by bringing myself this difficulty and this pain. And people maintain their stress levels. I've got good friends who I gotta get to work. And they have no time to breathe or to have a nice time. No time to enjoy life. It's just like they're on caught on that treadmill. So we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little special music for you. And then we'll be taking your calls at 212-209-2900, my friends. 212-209-2900. Be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Yo, this is G-Love on WBAI, New York.
Go. Beautiful, buddy, beautiful. Thank you.
sun has left and forgotten me. It's dark, I cannot see. Why does this rain pour down? I'm gonna drown in a sea of deep confusion. Somebody told me, I don't know who.
Tomato from Pink Martini. Hang on, little tomato. That's what I say to all of you, my friends. Hang on, little tomato. You're going to be okay. Remember the John Lennon song? Hold on. Hold on, John. John, hold on. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. I used to listen to that. It touched my heart every time. Compensation is described as the automatic movements made by the body to maintain balance. It's a physical description of compensation. To maintain balance. We try to maintain balance. We need equilibrium. There's a psychiatrist recently who's focused his attention on the inner ear, and he was convinced that 90% of most psychological ailments took place because of an inner ear imbalance. And that was his specialty. His specialty was dealing with senses of imbalance that came from inner ear something, infection, disturbance, something. So when he addressed this, I mean, he did, I know we have it on our website. It was very convincing that almost everything comes from a sense of imbalance. Let me tell you my big balance story. My big balance story had to do with riding a bike. I could never ride a bicycle. I tried to ride a bike ever since I was a kid, and I couldn't. Because somebody was always telling me, the way you ride a bike is you balance half your body on one side, and you find a balance in the middle. So I, being a literal kind of guy, said, okay, I got to get half of my weight on one side and half my weight on the other, and then pedal forward and the bike will move. And everybody said, that's exactly what it is. You balance in the middle. Don't you all think that's how you ride a bike? Going for years and years and years, trying to ride a bike, trying to balance myself in the middle, I just couldn't do it. I felt like such, I don't know, what's wrong with me? My feet, my sense of balance. Meanwhile, successful in all other things in life. And able to balance myself in a whole bunch of other places, including dancing, but not on that bicycle. Because I kept trying to balance myself in the middle until finally I go into a bike store because a friend of mine wanted to rent a bike. And the man says, what about a bike for you? I said, no, I can't ride. He said, why not? I said, because I can't do it. He said, of course you could. So he gives me a bike, and I get on it. I said, okay, I'm going to try to balance myself once again. He said, no, don't balance yourself. He said, jiggle the wheel. I said, what do you mean jiggle the wheel? He said, you jiggle the wheel. If you move it back and forth a little bit, that's what keeps you up. I said, you gotta be kidding me. And I jiggled the wheel and I rode around the block until I fell. And then I got up and I rode again. But all that time I was trying to find balance. And all I needed was to jiggle the wheel. Well, my friends, that's my story for you. Learn how to jiggle the wheel. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, is that me?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Armand. This is Noelle from Long Island.
Hello, Noelle.
Hi, yeah. So I, my background is, you know, I have had a very traumatic childhood, and I spent the beginning portion of my life, majority of my life, actually, with a food addiction that I escaped into, escaping from reality through that. And I had no idea that that's what I was doing. Until I joined the 12-step program, and now I love reality. You know, I hate it, but I love it. I hate it, but I always love it.
Oh, give me a good example of that, would you, Noelle? What do you mean by loving reality? Tell me what that's. Give me an example of it.
I love feeling the good and the bad and the ugly.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, like you say, feel the pain. I want to feel the pain. I feel alive. You know, I was so deadened. I had been battling depression and anxiety my whole life because I was trying to escape through this addiction, but it was such a temporary fix. You know, the feelings were always there. I was never dealing with the real issues, as you had, you know, been speaking about. And now I try to confront challenges and not run from them. And
so the worst is probably it started off as a minor pain. You know what I mean? You said it had a very traumatic childhood.
I did.
I mean, I'm sure it was traumatic, but the pain is in the memory because, you know, we're growing up, right? So let's say you had a traumatic childhood. Let's say even worse. Let's say we were somebody who was in a country where there was cleansing going on, right? And you had your family wiped out and stuff like that and stuff like that.
Right,
and you were just abused and tossed all over the place, and yet some of those people, they come out okay.
So
something happens in our interpretation of the past.
Yeah,
that makes that pain.
Well, I took it to mean that I was defective, and I carried that through my traumatic childhood. I came to, I think, and getting in touch with everything.
Now that was a good protection. Okay, so let's look at that very thing.
Right.
By being abused as a child, which obviously you were.
Right.
And then saying to yourself, but I'm abused because I'm broken.
Right.
Because there's something wrong with me.
Right.
Then at the very beginning there, you didn't have to confront. You couldn't because you didn't have the weapons to. You found a way of not confronting the issue then. Convince yourself that you're broken.
Mm-hmm.
Now you convince yourself that you're broken. And you get older in life. And you have this pain, supposedly, of feeling broken. But
mm-hmm.
that's not the pain you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
The pain goes before that, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get the pain of being broken and we say, aha, you know what the solution is? Entenmann's. Or whatever whatever food stuff you can come up with. What's your favorite food stuff that you were addicted to? Probably pasta.
Cheesecake.
All right. A clear relationship. Would you know what that tells me?
What?
That tells me that your mother was missing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Gone.
Yeah. That's why people like cheesecake.
That it wasn't, had nothing to do with the fact that I was broken. And then, of course, as a little girl, I can't, you know, our parents are omnipotent. So we can't. So I just place that onto myself, that brokenness. And, but then, you know, looking at my mother now as fallible and human and knowing that I'm not broken, I can move on and heal.
Well, also knowing that you don't have a mother, that you never had one.
Exactly.
That you're willing to face the fact that you never had a mother.
Right, and learning how to be a mother to myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know how I knew that it was your mother was missing by cheesecake?
Baking?
What?
What, from baking or?
No, because cheesecake is, it's almost like a mother's breast.
Really? Really?
Yeah. If you think about the texture, the milkiness, you know? And so people's preferences for their foods usually indicate what it was that they were missing.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, okay.
All right.
It's
like, it's funny. And you're right, Noelle. You're very brave. It's terrific. You face the pain, and it's only pain.
That's right.
It's only pain.
That's it.
Put those words on a wall. It's only pain.
Exactly.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. Let's see if there's another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
I'm good. Who is this?
Tony from the Bronx.
Tony, I can barely hear your voice. It's almost like...
Well, how about now?
Now you sound wonderful. Thank you. What's the difference?
Great,
what was the difference between the two sounds? What were you doing?
I just got a little closer, that's all.
Okay, thank you very much.
You know, it's funny, when you were speaking, I could pretty much... It was like a laundry list, and I was saying yes, 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 yes. I got everything you mentioned. You know, it's really funny. But you said to call in with something that has helped for me. And it's in reference to two things, really. One in relationships and one in the area of pain, specifically back pain. And for me, I'll tell you the one about back pain, what I've noticed. Because, you know, in retrospect, it's easy to figure out for me what has worked and what hasn't. And I'm able to see myself without my long stories, you know, long, sad stories. And what I noticed is that in my back pain was that what I do now, I ask myself, and again, I don't know it all, and I don't know the answer, but it does help, is I ask myself now, what am I avoiding? What am I trying to avoid? Because I notice that my back pain flares up when I'm trying to avoid something in my life.
Wow, that's a great insight. When you try to step away from something, you know, that's when your back will get the most strain. Terrific.
But again, it's not that I'm so smart. It's only looking back that I see that I've done that in a 20-year period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how. So now, whenever I get that back pain, instead of cursing myself and cursing my body and like, what's wrong with you? You know, we're so hard on ourselves. I go, okay, I got it. I got the message. Thank you. Got the message. All right. And I come from a different point of view where I know I'm looking for answers and I'm looking for solutions, but I come from, you know, like, I'm just thankful that it's almost like an alarm clock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a siren, you know, like a panic. So that really helps me. And what happens is that, again, it just comes with experience. It's like the first time, you know, I've had my heart broken, it felt like the end of the world. You know, by the third time you get your heart broken, you're like, okay, it hurts, and you shed a tear or two, but you know you got to move on.
Good going. Some people, Tony. Other people, they don't get that. Other people say, okay, we'll just try harder, and the pains get deeper and deeper and deeper because they're never really dealing with the issue that's underneath, which is the avoidance of the original pain. But you seem to be somebody who's had a good... you've had a good introspective finger, you know. You've been able to point to yourself and ask yourself what's going on. You know what else I discovered that was kind of interesting? I was taught by Fritz Perl. When a person has a disorder in any particular part of their body, you can metaphorically ask a question. Like, for example, a person says, I have a pain in my eye. You can say, what is it you don't want to see? You know, the person says, I have some, what is it you don't want to say? When a person says, I'm losing my hearing, you could ask the question, what is it you don't want to hear? And it becomes very interesting because even though you're just kind of fitting it in somewhere and it may not really be valid, it really brings up a lot of interesting stuff. So I like your metaphor about the back. Yeah. Another man I know used to say when there was a problem with the stomach, it usually meant there was a problem with nurturance. Nurturance, like you're not being nurtured and you can't nurture yourself. That's in the stomach. And then he'd say, when it's the back of the neck, you have difficulty, he said, with the burden that you're carrying on your shoulders. Just really interesting. how wonderful you could learn about these things. And, or just speculate, because even if it's not true, at least points you in a direction. So, Tony, yes, good. Good voyage you're on this path. You know, and Noel are...
Yeah, it's not like having an answer, but
I understand.
You're in the ball game, you know?
You at least have a good question to me, which is far more valuable. Thanks very much for calling in, Tony.
Thank you.
Sure. Tony and Noel. Let's take another caller. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi. I'm from Long Island, too, like Noel, and I kind of related to what she said. The word I would use, you've been saying compensation and overcompensation, undercompensation. The word that's gotten me through after all these years of trying to figure out what's wrong with me and that kind of stuff is acceptance. Really, that's all it is.
Tell me what you mean.
You may be broken. I may be broken. I have, you know, been alone, and loneliness is not bad. Being independent, you know, compensating for loneliness with being independent or being independent leading to loneliness, whatever you want to say or how you put it, there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, you learned that. What's your name, by the way?
Anna. I'm sure no one recognizes the... I'm sure no one knows me, but...
I hope it's A-N-N-A.
Yes.
With two N's. Good, because that means the third person... who's got four letters in their name. Noel, Tony, and Anna.
Noel and Anna, yes.
Tony and Anna, right? And Tony also. Good. That's what we need, four-letter names.
Yeah, I like to see those little relationships, too, you know, four letters and maybe...
I know you do. That's why I'm mentioning it to you, because you seem to connect a lot of dots for yourself.
Well, it's taken a long, long time, and I think just because you're old, it doesn't mean it's not too late to connect those dots, but in a sense... I don't want to fix myself anymore. I mean, I did go to therapy. That thing about the cheesecake was so on target. But it took me almost 70 years to figure out that I never had a mother.
Yeah, well, you didn't.
And you just said it.
You could have just called in. You could have just called in the radio show and you would have gotten it in 1 minute.
Yeah. I mean, it's only in the last couple of years that I realized that it was that I've always been looking for a mother. And, cheesecake was always the thing I went for, that and marzipans and chocolate, which I have no interest in any of these things anymore. But the cheesecake was a very vulnerable type of thing that I would fall to. But seriously, I was listening and I thought that... Very, very insightful stuff. I was really moved by
Anna, there was a change in your life. You said two things strike me from what you said. You used the word old, and I was proud of you for saying that word because, you know, most people are afraid of the word.
Yeah.
When you say old, what do you mean?
Well, I will be 70.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, I mean, I never thought I would ever reach this age.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured about... I was preparing to go, I guess, back in 2004.
Oh, okay. Around 60 or so.
I really felt then I didn't belong here, and I was just waiting. And since I've stuck it out already till almost 70, and I cannot, they won't allow you to leave with dignity. But I truthfully, I'm very lucky. I'm very healthy and all of that. The thing is that I am old.
That's great.
I never thought I'd get to be 70. You know?
That's great. Yeah, no, I often say if I thought I was going to live this long, I would have flossed.
Right. Or I would have not eaten so much chocolate or cheesecake. Though I have nothing to complain about. I may not have had my mother, but I certainly had good food growing up. And that really holds you up when you're old. I have to tell you that.
And it also, your spirit holds you up.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Your spirit holds you up. There's an awful lot of people I know who have lived on cigarettes and beefsteaks, and they get to their old ages, and they're still fine, and it's somewhere it seems to be the spirit that carries you through as well as the good fruits and vegetables.
You know, and music is the most healing thing I know. I really feel that music, you were talking about balance. and equilibrium, and that inner ear thing is probably a real, that's a real gem. The fact is, music covers it all. You find your space, your equilibrium, your balance. If you can develop rhythm, you know, I mean, it's...
You know, there's a thing I would like you to have as a gift. I would like you to go to my website, thepositivemind.com, and you're going to find a place where there's... You'll find something that says poetry and meanderings, and in there, there's a poem about music that I didn't write, but somebody wrote that is just exquisite. I'd like you to find that and have that for yourself.
Oh, I will.
Okay,
I
go
will.
To the website. Thank and you. Anna, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
And
take care.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye. So three people with four-letter names that have the insight to have gotten to a certain point. But you know, you notice what I like about all three, that none of them were preachers. Nobody came on and said, what you gotta do is this, and you gotta do this, and you gotta bow to the east, or you gotta study, or you've gotta do your disciplines. I'm so glad. I'm so glad to have people around who say, well, here's what I did, and I'm not perfect at it, and I didn't really make it work so much, but, you know, it's making life a little better for me. You, my friends, are my best teachers. You, the ones who could give the example of talking about yourself without preaching, can make the biggest difference when you talk to the other people out there. And then when you get to the ripe age that Anna's talking about and you have contact with people, it's a beautiful way to contact people. Not to tell them, you got to do this and you got to do that and you do this, but just to say, here's what I did. And it's helped me out a lot. Well, that's the way I really feel about the positive mind with all of you. I've learned a lot of stuff. I've gone to a lot of school. I've studied many things. But I've also tried them on. And what I present to you is the stuff that I've learned from trying it on mainly, not just from giving it to people and doing things. So, listen, we could one last reminder while we got our last 30 seconds, the buddy thing. Nice thing, WBAI. Join, support, you support the station, you support WBAI. Go to the website, the WBAI.org, and you can find out how to do that. I will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. My special thanks to Gianna Valerio and to Lisa Arnone helping me with today's program. Special thanks. I'll be back with you shortly. Send me an email, would you? Let me know what you think about this stuff. Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com.